The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Anyway, yeah. Welcome, Nettie.
Thanks a lot. I've had my spirits quashed. yeah, we're non-traditional accountants. We like to laugh with our customers. We like to know them.
Especially like when they produce their books.
We like to take them seriously. And I'm generally very well behaved.
I've just been hit by a Mars bar.
It could have been a canopy.
From Cockneyland.
Oh, where that went.
But anyway, this month, I've brought back a returning guest. So it might kind of been that boring coming out with me the first time that he's come back again. Mark, who's been a client of Riff for a number of years, and he's a little bit of a Caractacus Potts, actually. He likes to work with all the people who are inventing and what they're going to do next and so on. Mm. So do you like that? That's my Ian Fleming bit this time.
Yeah.
And he works with some really innovative people. And Mark and I have worked together with your business for how many years?
Yeah, it's been 4 years.
Four or five years. Yeah. And he's always coming up with something a little bit different. So it's always nice to have him in here. And now he lives locally. It's not many people who move to be closer to their accountants.
No.
And yet Mark has.
Silence, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how good we are.
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it.
We are closer.
Yeah, we are closer now than we used to be.
So just before we talk to Mark, what's happening with you? What's with the lovely folks at Rift? You've been doing some stuff for me.
We have.
Which I'm very pleased with. Thank you.
You're very welcome. It's all just business as usual. You know, it's going to be a surprise at the end of January because everybody has to do a self-assessment again. I don't know if you know, they've changed the date again. It's still the 31st of January.
It's getting ridiculous, isn't it? Because they've put back digital returns. They've suspended for a year reverse VAT.
Yep.
I mean, it's almost as if they don't know what they're doing.
Imagine that. But, this year, just for, continuity, we are going to do deadline day of the 31st of January again for self-assessment tax returns. It will still be a surprise to a number of people who will then be fined £100 the minute it's late. So, for goodness sake, just do it.
Get on with it. Yeah.
So that's coming up. That's probably the next big milestone, apart from, obviously, the Christmas word.
Yeah.
Which I believe, again, is the 25th of December this year.
I know. It's amazing, that, isn't it? It's surprising how that happens.
Yep. But in the meantime, people like Mark are continuing to work on all their innovative ideas with their clients.
Absolutely. And Rift have established another company for me because Bird told me she was starting a company and I thought, I'm not being left out, so I'm going to start one.
He did as well.
Yeah, anybody who wants to start a business, just come and find me.
Yeah.
Okay? I'll come and talk to
you. If I'd have known we were going to do Cockney Canapes, I wouldn't have done the other one, but
I'd do both.
Well, I could.
We can do it all. We can do it all. We'll make a great team, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We do make a great team. You do a fabulous job for me. Thank you.
You are very welcome.
So, introduce Mark formally then.
What, again?
Yeah. Without all the waffle this time.
Okay. Yeah. So this is Mark from the company called Luma ID.
Yep.
And I'll let him talk about him because that's always the best way.
Absolutely, Mark. Welcome back onto the show.
Thanks very much. It's quite some time
since you were on.
It was a while ago, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was certainly more than a year ago, wasn't it?
We had a VR headset that we had designed.
You were doing VR, weren't you?
VR was at its virtual reality peak.
And we were in our old studio.
Yes.
We were?
Yeah, we were.
And you brought the cardboard one that it all started with the prototypes.
So, absolutely. So the VR buzz is now kind of a little bit onto the next
thing. It's mainstream now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really mainstream. So start off, Mark, by telling us about Luma, what your company actually does, and then we're going to talk about some of the things you brought along as well.
I know, the pressure's on now after Pam's brilliant presentation and everything. I'm trying to hit all the points now.
She's going to go, well, hold on a minute, who's your target market now, Mark?
I know, I'm trying to list all these things in order.
Who are you going to sell that to then?
So I started the company in 2013. We're now a team of six. The studio is based in Woolwich, but I'm based in Margate. So, over in the two different places. And basically, we produce prototypes. We develop for our clients and then, develop them into different versions and then produce productionized versions. We basically focus on medical industry. because it's important to focus on areas like that.
Yeah. Well done, Mark. Well done.
He's been racking his brain for that.
Written a whole business plan while he's been waiting.
Yeah, yeah, I have got some notes here. MedTech is great for us. It ticks all the boxes, you know. It's
what led you to look at that as a was it something you were asked to do and then you thought, wow, this is good, that we can do more of this?
So everything you've said that we've basically done. So we started Luma, you know, two guys that had a job in industry, wanted to be our own boss, started a consultancy, you know, normal kind of thing, designing anything and everything. And we did that for a few years. And then we just had a portfolio of products that we had under our belts. And then we just started to choose, you know, a direction that we wanted to go down. Mm. And we've been working now with a surgeon on a really exciting medical product. I can't say anything about it yet as it's still under NDA.
Right.
But it's going to be going to clinical trials next month. So it's incredibly exciting. So to having designed all these things in the past for consumer markets and for retail and for everything else is great, but it's nothing's, you know,
exciting as
we're going to go and actually hopefully be at the clinical trials or a few of them.
Okay.
And that's going to be really testing our skill set to, you know, we'll be actually seeing the devices being used. So so that's one portion of what we do. Mm. Bike products, something else that we've done in the past, and now we're trying to sort of grow, you know, attract more clients in that market.
Okay.
So bike safety lights, indicators. One of the indicators was on Dragon's Den this year, which was quite cool.
Right.
That you designed?
Yeah, for a client. Yeah, Brighter Bikes. So check that out. That's a cool one.
I want to ask a few questions here because there's loads of interesting stuff going on here. Once you're given a commission, presumably somebody comes to you and goes, I want you to design a prototype that goes bing or something.
Yeah.
What's the process that you go through with something like that? You know, I mean, because if you gave a kid a bunch of crayons, they could probably draw pictures or something. But how do you go about the prototyping process?
I was just talking to Pam about this. The price of the resources available is a starting point. So what sort of resources does the client have and what are we talking about? So if it's getting a prototype on the table to then maybe generate, you know, seed round funding. Is one type of client, or it might be, you know, we've got a full budget to produce a full product design. So it's very much dependent on the customer and their resources. But we're doing problem solving always. So it's always the same thing. So, you know, dealing with, you know, what we've got and getting the best out of it.
Right.
So, you know, if you come to me with a budget that you have in mind, and a specification of a prototype that you'd like, you know, we try and work out what is the best approach to get the most out of it.
So are you an inventor, Mark?
I guess a little bit. I mean, I don't really have time to...
Yeah.
That's what I meant. When you talk... Do you know who Karatka's Pots is?
Yes.
Yeah. So from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
He's always the one that's making all the different things and trying it and giving it a go.
Mm.
So loads of what Mark does is R&D, because it's everything is trial and error, isn't it?
Yeah. So you don't know... I mean... What I love about what I do is that you're building something that never existed before.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone creates anything, you know, there's that buzz of an idea turns into something that you can pick up and use.
The thing about this is it could be so broad as well, couldn't it? If somebody comes to you and says, right, we need a prototype to do X, Y, or Z, I'm assuming there's loads of things that you don't have in-house, you know, loads of knowledge and expertise that you don't have in-house. I'm sure you've got loads, but you see what I mean? You might have something that goes, well, we need to know about the internals of a spacecraft or something.
Yeah. You have to know your limits, and we always say that do what you do best. That's our kind of motto.
But do you ever do a prototype where you go out and buy in some expertise?
So you know, we have a in-house kind of CAD team, design team that have our skill set and previous products. And if there's anything specialist, then we outsource.
Yeah.
And it's things like running things like 3D printers. So we've got a couple of 3D printers. We could, if we wanted to, spend all day playing with those.
I'm sure.
Like, they're a great bit of kit, but we choose to have a couple of basic ones in-house, and then anything specialist that's required, we sub it out.
Right.
So we try to run a core team focused on what we do that covers, you know, 80% of the design work. And then, if you need a specialist who's an expert in X or Y, we will like, you know, bring that in, and it's, yeah, it's essentially problem solving on every
cool. And what would fascinate me about that is the stuff you must learn while you're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, how do you do that then? Well, I don't know, let's ask someone. Yeah.
And there's no like guaranteed direction or answer. It's just, you know, you choose the path based on experience and what you feel like is the best way to go. You know, you don't have all the answers when you start something. You have ideas, and it's all about iteration. So you know, every single prototype, if you line them all up, you look back and you see where you started, and it's this clunky, weird looking thing that evolves, and slowly over time, after testing it and refining it and getting feedback, it ends up, you know, the product that's in front of you. So I really enjoy that process. And the trick with the business side is to know when to stop.
Yeah.
You know, as engineers, and I think what we were talking about earlier, it's easy to focus on what you like to do, but you need to sell the product. You need to get the product out there.
Yeah.
And it's always that point where you've done enough to develop it. Right, now let's get it out. Let's start selling it. Let's focus on the other part of the business.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Could you tell us something that you have prototyped in the past that you're allowed to tell us, so that we can get a feel for what it is that you made, who you made, kind of made it for, and what happened to it?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is a nice example that I brought in. This is the elbow bike light. So this is a safety bike light that a customer of ours came to a couple of years ago, and he had this idea rattling around in his head for, you know, a decade or whatever, you know, thinking, how can we improve bike safety? He came to us with a handmade prototype that he put together, which I love, by the way. Anyone that makes anything and has had a go, I love it. Cool. Anything like that is great. And we took it and, I don't know, probably spent 20 iterations in 2 years. And now it's available on the market. We're working on another version now and front lights. And a customer came to us with an idea who's now got a business within the bike light market.
Okay, well, let me describe this, because we're on the radio. It's kind of a boomerang-shaped, L-shaped plastic device with a red light on one end and a clamp on the other.
Yeah, so it clamps into the back of your seat post.
Yeah.
So if this is the bike, you know, sort of facing, you can turn it left or right depending on where you are in the world.
Right.
So you obviously want the traffic to be passing you by. We've designed a light. So when the concept is when you're riding your bike in the dark or the rain, or, you know, in situations where it's hard to see, cars will use your light as a central point.
Yeah.
So, you know, they'll come up to you. And often if you ride your bike, you know, you suddenly have the feeling of being pushed over to one side.
Yeah.
The light is offset. So the idea is that by the time the car's caught up to you, you're a little bit further. They're a little bit further away from you, and
it's sticking out from the bike.
About
9 or 10 inches?
Yeah. We're trying to actually see if we can get some data to back this up, but that's the next phase of the project. Because if you've got some statistics that can actually back the claim, that would be great. But no, it's trying to design something that sticks out so it can be seen, which is great. But then you're on a bike, so your legs going over the bike. You know, you put your bike against a wall or in a bike shed. So we've designed something that has to take the impact. So it has this quite complicated ball joint system in there. So it'll take all the impacts, take all the knocks, be very long lasting and hard wearing. Get out of the way when it needs to. But then when it's on the bike, it will stay
it's
fixed
robust,
off one side. So that's hopefully a nice example.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah, presumably that's a finished product you've got in your hand.
Yeah.
Do you, when you're designing a prototype like that, is that the kind of thing you would hand back to him, or is it a bit more Heath Robinson than that you give him?
Oh, well, they evolve, yeah. The first one is very, like, just throw it together with what you've got. And,
yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of going away for too long and spending too much time on anything and trying to solve problems that maybe you're not aware of. I like to make a we call it quick and dirty prototype.
Just
get the concept out there, you know, test it out and basically try and work out where the issues lie, and if there's anything obvious before then, sort of developing a bit of a plan to go from there.
Yeah, many years ago, when I worked in the city, one of my jobs was designing futuristic based systems. Ours are all services rather than products, but we had a thing called a skunk works, where we just came up with stupid ideas that were really, you know, poorly thought through, but you just tried them and saw what the reaction is, and then you refined it from there. And that's a kind of similar process that you're going through.
I can't remember who said it, but fail quickly and fail fast, and then just move on to the next thing. And I think that works with almost any process,
everything,
doesn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah.
How long would that take you? So do you give yourself a budget of time to say, actually, we do 3 prototypes, we just sell packages that you go, actually, this is what we do. And if I came to you with an idea...
Yeah.
Do then, how do you sell that to me?
yeah, I could improve that a bit. I think I've
Because I'd want to know, well, how much is this going to cost? Because I would imagine you're wanting the greatest product, and that could take years down the line, couldn't it?
Yeah, so it's like I said, every single client, I have to work with the client that's in front of me and the resources to hand. So
budget is all.
So I'm always trying to work out, what's the budget? And with any project, the bigger the budget, the better the product will end up. And also depends on the complexity of the product. You know, sometimes you can only go so far, and you need an investor or you need backing to continue it. And that's often how it goes. If you explain someone your idea, and it's just a drawing, you'll go so far. If you put a prototype on the table, that's 90% there. All of a sudden, someone can see, A, you've gone ahead and actually developed something, and B, you can see what it is. Everyone's very busy, don't have a lot of time, and to imagine something is harder than seeing it. So
absolutely.
That's often the process that we like to do. You know, you go so far with what you have, and obviously we want to take on full projects and have fewer projects throughout the year and bigger ones. That's the long-term goal. But the reality is, you know, that takes a long time to set up. So we work on medium-sized projects now in between the larger ones. And the goal as us as a company is to just try and focus on the bigger ones.
So this bottle here that you've got, explain the bottle and where you are in that process. So
this is called Choose Water, and obviously very, very much of the times at the moment. The client that produced, the company Choose Water, produced plastic bottles at the moment. And it's a young entrepreneur that runs the business. And, you know, he sees the news like everyone else and just thinks, God, you know, I've got to do something to stop this issue. And if I can't do it, you know, who's going to do it? Mm. So, he's basically he came up with the idea of the material. I can't say too much about it, but it's a combination of paper and a special lining. And we developed the tooling for the prototypes. So he gave us. So we used 3D printing to basically produce low volume versions of this bottle. Right. Because there was no other way of fabricating it. So, and that's often why we use 3D printing. It's a much more cost effective way of trying something out.
Yeah. And it's reusable.
I there'll be a point where it'll break down, but it's really to replace the one time plastic.
Got it.
Use. And it was picked up by Sky Atlantic, who are now injected some money and resources into it. And hopefully very soon you'll see it on your shelves at your local supermarket.
But it's interesting, isn't it? And that's, I don't know how you feel about this, Mark, but it's something that I see, you know, people moan about things, but it's often the inspiration to do something new. It just takes time, though, to, you know, because you've got to experiment and you've got to find out what works and all the rest of it. But I really do, you know, everybody's falling about saying we're all going to die, but I really don't think we are, because we will invent things to get around it. In the same way that we invented plastic to do a job, we've now decided we don't like plastic. We'll invent something else, something similar to that, that will move us away from, you know, single-use plastic. We will.
It's just all about keep pushing the envelope, keep developing, not always just accepting what's in front of you.
Yeah, and of course, new materials come along all the time, do they not?
New materials come along, but also there's great materials that were used that can be used again. It's looking at it.
I was reading a really interesting article yesterday about nuclear fusion technology, which has been something that's been played with for ages and ages and ages, because, you know, it has. And then a small tiny British company have actually built a small fusion reactor that works.
But you know who's been doing this for years and has injected billions into this? It's Bill Gates.
Yeah.
But he's been doing this for years.
But that's my whole point. Loads of people in the nuclear industry have been playing around with this, but a tiny, tiny company in Yorkshire have actually built one that works. Yeah. And sometimes it's just a breakthrough that a big corporate doesn't find, because you've just got people going, do you know what? We'll just experiment with this.
Well, it's why I like working with smaller companies, and sometimes even individuals. We're trying to move away from that long term because obviously the size of the business. But big businesses take ages to make decisions.
Yeah.
But an individual will be able to go, I want to design that. I'm a decision maker. I want to go ahead with it.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I've worked in big corporates, so I know what they're like. You know, sometimes they lose their bottle as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll go, we won't do that anymore because, you know, we can't see where you're going with this, or, you know, that doesn't sound right. So, and I think that's where real innovation happens, is in small smaller places where people are prepared to just experiment with things and just keep going with it. Can I ask you a question? And you might not be able to answer this, but what's the your most favourite thing to date that you've developed?
The product we're doing for the surgeon.
I knew you were going to say that because you can't tell us what it is.
It's been so nice to work with someone who, you know, has a. I think it's the approach with working with someone who's very good at what they do, but gives you the freedom to do what you need to do and treats it. You know, the question with that is never what's the budget. It's how do we do it to get the right output? It's a different thinking process with someone like that. And I think that's the way I think. It's a shame money drives the world because, you know, that for me is just the best way to think about things.
But it's nice to think, isn't it? Sorry, Paul, of somebody that's a surgeon, obviously working on the likes of us the whole time, has come up with something in his day-to-day work that thinks,
I was just going to say, funnily enough, there is... surgeons tend to be engineers. Like my dentist, for instance, hello Ian, is fantastic at inventing processes and materials. I might have got this wrong, but he was one of the early stage developers of fiberglass teeth, right? And basically it's a technique where if you've got a gap, before you used to have a crown or an implant, now he just fiberglasses across the gap. Yeah, it's so much cheaper, harder wearing, and it still looks like a tooth because they can shape it. And he kind of developed that process for doing it. And he's invented tools for dentistry. He's invented processes for it. He's an engineer and he just likes inventing.
The Super Vet does this as well, doesn't he? Yeah. He does the same thing. So he invents implants and things like that and how to put in things.
So you quite often find surgeons and dental surgeons, and because they're at the sharp end of what they're doing, they go, well, if only I had a tool that could do this, I could get around the corner of the... you know, epicanthus or something, and hook out the bit that's giving you a problem. That's technical, that is. You wouldn't understand it.
No, I don't get it.
No, you need
Mark,
to.
Mark, are you a crazy inventor? Are you somebody who wants to invent, but look at the face. Yeah, go on, Mark. What have you invented?
I wish I had the classic case of more time in the day, because we see so many cool things and it's trying to, you know, be able to step back and say, oh, that would be really good if we could incorporate that with that. I always have these ideas. I have a little son, and things break on prams, and I'll 3D print and replace them. And I just like doing things like that. It comes in handy.
We've got a 3D printer at home, and there's often when we do lots of time trials and that, the position of the handlebars. So Stephen will like do different handlebar positions. It's crazy because they're not out there, so they're so quick and easy to do. I'm quite often interested in, I bet you think, oh my God, I need to invent this or...
I use it a lot in just like the day to day. So like, I don't know, I did some DIY the other day and I needed, there was something that wasn't available anymore. So I just reverse engineered it and printed it out. So I incorporate it in my day to day life quite a bit. I guess, yeah. It
would You're be sad, no- Richard. That's what you are.
I guess I'd like to have more time to inject that energy into a business, but it will come. I'm trying to grow this, grow Luma. I have a young family, so those ideas just need to wait a little bit. And sometimes, at the end of the day, it's nice not to actually think about designing or anything else and step back from it.
Yeah.
What do you see, because with all your different inventors that come, do you call them inventors or creatives or...?
What
are you seeing as a trend with them? Because I like to look at groups of people that you see and you must go, do you know what, I knew they were going to do that, or they're going to make it successful or they're not.
Yeah, it's a tricky question. Unfortunately, I'm being honest with the commercial side, it's cost driven at the moment. Everything seems to be cost driven. If you want to make any kind of product and get into the marketplace, in the fields that we work in, it's retail out there is obviously like it's a tough time. And with Amazon and things like that, and there's always the example of, well, I can buy that on Amazon for that. So you're always battling, well, you know, that might not be very eco-friendly, or it might break after 10 uses, but the mindset of price is really...
But that's really where what Pam was saying comes in, you know, is that says, well, hold on a minute. Yeah, you might be able to buy a cheap one, but what's the market we're attacking here? Does it need to be cheap?
There's definitely, you know, that every single industry has its, you know, markets out there, but the mass retail is, you know, features are great and this and that's great, but ultimately, price. If you want to sell, you know, things at high volume, it seems to be obviously down to price sensitive, and hopefully
so
that changes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Mark, and I wanted to ask you as well, I mean, I guess a lot of the process will change as new materials become available as well. And for you, is there anything exciting happening in that field at the moment?
In the materials front? Well, I suppose it's something like this, just choose water bottle, isn't it?
Yeah.
A nice example of using paper pulp instead of plastic.
There's
lots, like I said, there's lots of things that have been done that could be brought back in again.
Yeah.
No, I just think we're in a time where, like, Kickstarter and those kinds of places enable great ideas to surface.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that the trend I notice is that people that are great with the idea side and like to push a product and develop it aren't good at selling it.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem, is that bad ideas get pushed to sometimes too much, and the great ideas don't get out there.
Isn't that the story of this country going back over 100 years? You know, we develop things like jet engines, hovercraft, and all kinds of things, and then everybody else ends up with them because nobody ever sold them here. We just invented them and then walked away.
I think it's the short term versus the long term kind of issues, and we all look so short term. You know, with a young family, I get that. You know, the resources are limited and everything else, but there's that different mindset of, well, if we make it right now and make it last, test of time, or we make it serviceable or whatever it might be, in the long run, it will work out.
Yeah. And while we've been talking, Mark has been developing some prototypes for Cockney canapes.
No, he has not.
Oh, has he not?
I was really excited then. I'm like, oh, I think we're onto something here.
Recyclable packaging, that's it.
Yes.
Wow, yeah. So, is there something that you'd really like to work on?
Oh, anything with wheels.
Anything with wheels.
Anything with wheels, I'm happy.
You see, Mark's a keen cyclist as
Cycle,
well.
Cycle, cars, karting. Right. Yeah, we did a soapbox earlier this year for Red Bull. That was really fun.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, that was really good. So, yeah.
A lot of people don't. I used to own a motor racing team, and motor racing is a fantastic place for developing new products, automotive products, you know, because you've got some very definite issues that you're trying to solve.
Yeah.
And a lot of those become mainstream eventually.
I'd like us to reinvent how to sell a car.
How to sell a car?
Oh, I hate it. We're just in the breeze of trying to buy a car. It's not difficult, but I want to enjoy the experience, and I don't enjoy the experience of buying a car. It's boring. There you go. That's what I'd like from the Automotive Society.
Ah, okay. There you go.
I just ranted then, didn't I?
She did. Yeah, she did.
Got on your soapbox.
But you know what I mean? So they see, Pam, you need to go in and teach them how to sell.
That's a whole different niche.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
It's been fascinating talking to Mark Little of Luma. Mark, thank you so much. And thank you for bringing along some of the products that you've prototyped.
Thank you.
I love what you're doing. It's a fantastic thing, and you must get great joy out of what you're doing. And I understand some of the constraints, but there must be loads of fun. You know, it must be like having
I'll come on again with the surgeon's product. How about that?
When will you be able to do that? When are we looking at?
Next year, I'll be able to share it. Yeah, after the clinical trials.
Can you fit it in this room?
No, I know. It's a tool for hooking out your hippocampus. That's what it is. I already decided that.
He's got no idea what he's
talking about. It's just above your cerebellum. Don't you know nothing?
You're a nurse.
You're a nurse. You should know this. Mark, thank you so much. Fascinating talking to you. I love what you're doing. Keep on keeping on with what you're doing. Thank you for joining us. And you are more than welcome back when you can tell us about this product and anything else supersonic or with wheels on that you prototype.
Bring it in.
Yeah. Mark Little of Luma, thank you so much.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.